Hello, everyone, and welcome to Everyday MBA, interviews with best-selling authors, innovative thought leaders, and top-shelf executives, all sharing their best techniques and tips that you don't learn in business school. I'm your host, Kevin Crane, and I'm so pleased that you're listening. And so pleased to welcome Sally Helgeson to the program. Sally's work is widely regarded as the gold standard when it comes to women's leadership. Since the publication of her book, The Female Advantage, in 1990, she's written 5 books in the field and presented thousands of workshops to women leaders all over the world. She's with us today to talk about her new book, co-authored with Marshall Goldsmith, How Women Rise, Break the 12 Habits Holding You Back from Your Next Raise, Promotion, or Job. The book helps women identify what worked for them in the past will not necessarily work for them and where they want to go in the future, and then how to eliminate those behaviors so they can advance to the next level, whatever that may be. So stay tuned for Sally Helgeson in just a moment, and listen in the later part of the interview for 3 action items that you can use to take advantage of the ideas and advice in this interview. But first, you can reach me and keep in touch with the show at everyday-mba.com. Listen to the interview archive, check out the bookstore, or subscribe, won't you? That way you'll never miss an episode. It's all there at everyday-mba.com. And would you like to be a guest on the show? It could happen. Find out more at everyday-mba.com/guest. Now, on to the interview. Sally Helgeson, welcome to Everyday MBA. In your book, you say that women often face specific and different challenges than men do as they seek to advance their careers. How so?
Well, Kevin, I think that the primary thing is that women often have different experiences in their career, particularly as they move along. And those experiences can shape their expectations and begin to get in their way. I hear a lot from women who say, oh, it's, one of my biggest problems is, when women speak up and say something very declarative, it's viewed as aggressive. And when men do it, it's viewed favorably as assertive. And enough times of having that experience for women can make them rather gun shy about about really sharing their views. So they'll begin to back off. They'll begin to lose confidence at times in themselves. Or feel discouraged because they feel that their best ideas aren't getting a good reception. And these are part of the experiences that sometimes, I never say always about anything having to do with gender, but that can often shape what women's experience is and what Marshall Goldsmith, my co-author, and I have sought to do in our book, How Women Rise, is really address how those experiences and the expectations around them can create habits that hold women back and help women to address those habits.
You know, Sally, I've heard that repeatedly from the women that I've interviewed recently with different podcasts, different forums, but often women say the same thing, that they're hesitant to speak up.
Yeah.
So, and I guess maybe that surprises me a little bit. Maybe I shouldn't be surprised. But I guess it does, and makes me feel sad. So the question then becomes, so what do you suggest that women do about that?
Women need to speak up. Fearing what the reaction you'll get in advance, overthinking what the reaction you'll get in advance, then you become the barrier. It's not always true. If you need to think about how you're going to frame something. But I personally have been working in women's leadership for 30 years since the publication of my book, The Female Advantage, Women's Ways of Leadership, in 1990. So in 30 years, yes, I've worked with women leaders and aspiring women leaders all around the world. And my experience has convinced me that women get in their own way when they let the experiences they have had make them either reluctant to state their views or make a strong suggestion, or when they cause them to back off, prematurely. Because often, women can take it on themselves and say, oh, my boss didn't seem to really resonate with my suggestion. Maybe I shouldn't have made it.
Right.
Maybe I shouldn't have brought it up, but often a man might do the same thing. The difference is that a guy who has a lot of confidence, and I'm certainly not saying all men have confidence, but a guy who has a lot of confidence is going to keep coming back with that and find different ways to frame it. Whereas women often, especially at sort of mid-senior level, will back off, and that's problematic.
So the more that we talk about it, I think the better. I know I feel better when we talk about this. So we bring it up for women and men, so the perspective is grown.
That's very important, and that's part of the reason we wrote this book and co-authoring it with a man like Marshall Goldsmith, who has so much credibility with a business audience and with senior executives. Our hope is that this conversation gets more traction among men so that they can become more aware of what the impediments are, but also understand how to help women, form alliances with women to help them deal with some of these behaviors.
Mm. Well, Sally, I'm already off of my questions because now I have so many other questions. I guess you mentioned that women get in their own way, and I think I noticed this with my wife. She'll perseverate over an email response, or she'll think about what something was said in a meeting or how someone reacted, men and women, often yes. women too. She will think about that and think about that and analyze that. And I just sometimes want to say, will you just stop it and don't think so much? I think that men don't not think, but they certainly, we don't necessarily perseverate over that, right? And kind of get in our own way. Do you think that's a trait that women always have that men don't, or is that, how does that work?
I think it's a trait that women often have. And, you know, let me give you an example. And what I find often, and this is something that I think is very helpful for women, is that learning to let go, either because you fear you may have made a mistake or you didn't do something perfectly, is really essential mm-hmm. for moving to a higher level. People who are at a higher level generally are dealing with so much and are delegating so much that they cannot sweat every detail. I had a fantastic example of it that actually was quite amusing. My co-author, Marshall Goldsmith, is very good at letting things go. And we were at his apartment in New York City one day working on the book. We tended to, you know, put in very long days once or twice a month, talking it through. And his assistant called from California, where his home and office are, and said, and I heard him saying, he said, oh, I was supposed to call him at 2, Dr. Kim, okay, well. And he hung up. Mm-hmm. And I was sitting there and I thought, oh my goodness, I know who Dr. Kim is. He is the CEO of the World Bank. And I was trying to put myself in the position of missing a call that I was supposed to place with the CEO of the World Bank and saying, oh, well. My response right. would be to spend the next 6 weeks beating
freaking
myself
out.
Up.
Right.
And so it was really helpful to see that kind of, you know, we're all human. We all make mistakes. Maybe that wasn't perfect. You know, I have the confidence that, you know, that I can recoup on that. It was really helpful to me to see it demonstrated. And I actually, when I came home, I printed up a banner in about 50-point font, if such a thing exists, and put it on my wall in my office. It said, oh, well. And I try to use that to practice a little self-forgiveness and tolerance, which, again, is very important at higher levels, because if you can't forgive yourself, then you're going to have a hard time forgiving others and being tolerant. And I will say this. I've been doing this 30 years, and I've never once heard anybody say, I work for a perfectionistic boss, and I love it. So letting go early or in mid-career of that expectation for ourselves, that we will do everything perfectly, that we will cross every T and dot every I, is really important for positioning ourselves when we've got a lot of responsibility and are a leader.
Hi, this is Vanessa Van Edwards, author of Captivate, The Science of Succeeding with People, and you are listening to Everyday MBA with Kevin Crane.
I'm so pleased that you're listening, and I hope you don't mind if I take just a moment to let you know a little bit more about me, Kevin Crane, and Crane Communications Group. I'm a writer, editor and marketing communications consultant, and I've been pleased to be the written voice of some of today's leading brands, all working to create compelling knowledge leadership content for the web, white papers, blogs, social media, you name it. And I'd love to talk with you too about how I can help and make a difference. To find out more, just visit cranegroup.com. That's C-R-A-I-N-E, cranegroup.com. Let's talk soon.
You're listening to Everyday MBA.
Sally, the other thing that I've heard from women is that sometimes other women can be their worst adversary. I'm always framing it thinking that men were sort of out of line, but the women that I've talked to have also mentioned that it can be problematic with other women. Is that your experience as well?
Well, I have had that experience. I will say, again, having been doing this for, almost three decades, what I have watched and witnessed and feel that I can attest to is that that problem has diminished over the recent decades. And I believe one reason, there was a very interesting research institute in Dallas that did some research on that subject. And what they found is that women tended to be harder on other women in organizations or settings where there were fewer women. Where there were fewer women who had influence and authority, not just fewer women, because you can still find hospital settings where, senior administrators are quite punitive to some of the women who work on the front lines. But where you have more women in positions of authority and influence and have a less hierarchical structure that evolves, you tend to get fewer of those behaviors for the simple reason that women don't like women who are not supportive of other women. So if there are a lot of women who aren't supportive of other women are going to have a tougher time than they used to have back, say, in the 80s when, every office seemed to have kind of a queen bee. So what I've seen over the decades is a real change in that. And in fact, most internal women's leadership networks or support groups or internal conferences have actually been started, in my observation of organizations, by senior women who were determined to help other women rise. And when that happens, you don't get much of that behavior. So I think it's a problem that is mending itself. That's not to say it's not real and I don't still hear it. But I think that that the solution to that is really more women in positions of authority and influence, because then those women who really don't support other women will be less likely to thrive.
Our guest today is Sally Huggison. Her new book, co-authored with Marshall Goldsmith, is How Women Rise, Break the 12 Habits Holding You Back from Your Next Raise, Promotion, or Job. You can get your copy at the Everyday MBA bookstore at everyday-mba.com/bookstore. Now, Sally, let's talk about your book. I want to dig into your book a bit. And you say that the things that worked for women in the past will not necessarily get them where they want to go in the future. Can you explain that?
I began doing a series of workshops for women on building careers that were more based on the capabilities of being more visionary, connected, intentional, and present, probably in about 2011, premiered it in Singapore. And in the intentional part of that workshop, I drew on my co-author, Marshall Goldsmith's fabulous book, What Got You Here Won't Get You There, which is about the behaviors that get in the way of successful people. And Marshall's guiding idea in that book, which has been very influential, is precisely what we explore here. How behaviors that can serve you well early in your career can begin to get in your way as you move higher. But Marshall is drawing, for his examples, on his client base, which is about 75 to 80% male, and a pretty confident and assertive group of males, I would say, since most of them are CEOs. So as I was using the book, it was very clear to me that some of the behaviors were not resonant for women particularly at all. For example, I think behavior one, he says, is learn to apologize. And, you know, I was reading that. I was thinking, oh, my goodness, there, I know women even at senior levels who can't open a door without saying, I'm sorry. So that's
yeah,
not.
Learn to not apologize.
Yeah, exactly. That's not really something for women. Or, you know, stop talking endlessly about how great you are and things like that. So I said, Marshall, you know, I find the same thing. I find that behaviors that are serve you well early on can get in your way. But I think the behaviors are often, not always, but often different for women. Why don't we explore that together? So indeed, I think that has really proven to be true, especially a couple of the behaviors we focus on, like overvaluing expertise. That is devoting too much of your bandwidth, as it were, in a new job to becoming an expert and learning every detail of the job, becoming a master at it. As opposed to also at the same time leaving yourself enough scope to build alliances and to assure that your work gets visibility. So those kinds of behaviors are ones we find more likely to get in women's ways, and that's what we focus on.
Is that sort of what you mean about building rather than leveraging relationships? Can you tell me more about that?
Yeah, that's a really interesting one. That's one I've noticed for quite a while. In the Female Advantage, go back to 1990, one of the capabilities I identified that women were particularly good at, the women leaders that I studied in that book, was building strong relationships. And it's interesting because back then, you know, today every bank wants to have a relationship with you, but back then building strong relationships wasn't necessarily seen as a particular leadership capability. And the environment has really evolved on that so that, you know, building strong relationships and even, you know, having empathy, these are now considered mainstream, very desirable leadership capabilities in organizations, in the military, et cetera. But so I began to think, you know, if women are so great at building relationships and if organizations value relationships so much, why haven't women benefited more at the most senior levels from the strong relationships that they indeed build? But what I began to realize from working with women, again, you know, very closely, women leaders and aspiring leaders over the last 30 years, is that although women are great at building relationships, they're often uncomfortable about leveraging them, doing those little asks, those quid pro quo activities, so that they're engaging people that they have a relationship with in helping them achieve, in helping themselves achieve specific career objectives. And when I ask women about that, are you good at this? Obviously, women who are terrific in sales are very good at it. But when I ask other women, you know, often who aren't in that field, you know, do you feel you're good at leveraging your relationships? They'll say things like, oh, no, I want people that I have relationships with to know that I really value them as friends. And I feel that if I were to, you know, make asks that would promote me or promote my career, that they would feel that I was just using them. So there's a lot of reluctance there. But the truth is that that's how successful careers usually work. You engage people, they help you, you help them, and you know, all the rising tide rises both of your boats. So that reluctance doesn't serve your career, but also, and I think this is really essential, that that when you engage somebody to help you achieve an objective, you're also presenting yourself as someone who could help them achieve an objective. So it really can be, if you think it through, a kind of generous act, because in asking for their support, engaging them, if you will, as an ally, you are also implicitly or explicitly saying, and what can I do to help you? How can we help one another be more successful in this venture, in this organization, or in our career? And so a little bit of a mind shift around the idea that it's not only okay, but it is also potentially generous and helpful to leverage relationships, I think would go a long way with serving some women who struggle with that.
Hi, this is John Danner, co-author of Built for Growth, and you're listening to Everyday MBA with Kevin Crane.
Do you want to get into podcasting but don't have the time, technology, or expertise to get it done? Maybe you want to create a podcast for your company or feature a happy customer in an audio interview of their own. My audio podcasting services give voice to your success and expertise. So if you like what I do, why not let me do it for you? Find out more at cranegroup.com. That's C-R-A-I-N-E, cranegroup.com.
You're listening to Everyday MBA.
What is the disease to please?
The disease to please is quite simply being so invested in being seen by virtually everyone as a wonderful person that you have a difficult time asserting your own boundaries or holding other people to account. And this, again, is something that often gets in the way of women. And even at relatively senior levels, we have a wonderful example in the book about a woman who was a community relations person for a very large hospital system. And as she rose higher, she came into a higher position in administration, but everyone loved her in the community. So she kept endlessly fielding requests from people she had worked with in her previous job. Oh, I don't want anyone to help me but you. Please help me on this. So she found that she was essentially doing two jobs in her effort to please or perhaps appease her former customers. And she had a very hard time letting go of that because she felt that, you know, she really knew their problems and she wanted to help them, until it was pointed out to her that by not allowing the staff that now held those positions to really do their job, she was getting in the way of their own development, and that her own career wouldn't have developed in the way it had if other people had done that with her. So that enabled her to really kind of switch her thinking around and see that she wasn't doing herself, but she also wasn't doing a lot of other people a favor by remaining engaged with something that she had moved on from because she was so eager to keep everybody happy, to make sure everybody was pleased.
The book is How Women Rise: Break the 12 Habits Holding You Back from Your Next Raise, Promotion, or Job. Now, Sally, how can women identify these habits and behaviors that hold them back? And once they do, how can they shed those behaviors so that they can advance to the next level?
Well, that's the heart of the book. The heart of the book is, I think, articulating what these behaviors are, describing what they are, is the first step. It's very helpful to women. And I've been on an extended, to say the least, book tour for the last 2 months, which will continue into the midsummer. And over I'm hearing women say, I identify with 6 of these behaviors. I identify with 9 of them. You have described me in behaviors 2, 3, and 6. So I think, you know, setting it out and surfacing why these behaviors, which are always rooted in a strength, why these behaviors can be problematic as you move forward, that's the first step. But we have a real template for behavioral change in this book. So the book is not just diagnostic about here are the behaviors that can get in women's ways. We have a real process for addressing it. And the first 2 steps, which I think are really important, the first one is to start with one thing, not even one behavior, but maybe one part of a behavior. If you're trying to be more concise, we have a behavior around offering too much information, too much background, etc., too many words. If you're trying to be more concise, don't decide, okay, starting next week, I'm going to become very concise in my communication. Maybe identify one meeting where you have gotten feedback that a regular meeting that you've gotten feedback, or a person you've gotten feedback from. Oh, well, I thought she was kind of all over the map. I couldn't quite follow what she was saying. It's too much information for me. And then start with that meeting or your interactions with that one person and think about doing the prep to become more concise in that situation, rather than trying for, you know, whole new me behavioral approaches, which usually can be very successful, but tend to be short-lived because it takes our brains a while to absorb a new behavior. And the other thing, And I think if I, you know, had to say one of the most important messages in this book is enlist allies in helping you make the behavioral changes you need. Don't try to do it alone. Are you trying to become more concise? Say to someone, you know, I'm trying to become more concise in my presentation at this meeting. Could you please just watch and give me some feedback afterwards? Do you think I'm doing a better job? Or if there's somebody you know who's remarkably concise, say, you know, I'm really trying to get more concise. I noticed you do a very good job of that. Do you have any tips for me? Is there anything you do in order to do that? So this not only gives you lots of ideas and support and fresh perspectives, but it also advertises that you're changing. People are busy and they don't necessarily notice, oh, Caroline used to kind of be all over the map, but now she seems like she's really crisp when she presents something. Or, you know, Ellen used to never talk up in meetings, and now she seems much more confident. People don't necessarily notice that, but if you're enlisting people to help you, you advertise it, and people begin to notice.
Well, Sally, it's been great speaking with you today. We're almost out of time, but before I let you go, I couldn't let you go without asking your perspective on sort of where we are today in our society, in politics, and our culture. Here in the news today, Harvey Weinstein being indicted. There's a lot going on with women and men. And what is your perspective on the Me Too movement?
I think the Me Too movement is one of the more positive things that has happened. And that is, it is a manifestation of the fact that a lot of women have stopped their voices when they have suffered, you know, real abuse at the hands of men who were either routinely verbally abusive. I'm not talking about guys who, you know, try out a, you know, occasional remark that may land as inappropriate, but routinely abusive in their speech or in any way threatening, or in the case of Harvey Weinstein, it was actually, he's being charged with rape.
With rape, yeah.
Yeah, so that's, you know, that's where I think it's really important. And it, you know, it always struck me when the second wife, it was a pretty high profile case with one of the presidents, with his, I think, you know, not chief of staff, but the guy right under him, who it was found out had, Porter, who had been physically abusive to both of his wives and one of his girlfriends. And what always struck me is that the second wife who came out and said that said she did it because she wanted to support that first wife. She saw the first wife who had made, you know, made clear what had happened to her, and it was documented. I mean, there were police reports, so it wasn't, you know, that was, it had happened. And she said she saw her getting so trashed in the media and by the allies of her former husband that she felt she had to speak up in order to support her. So I think that something is happening here where women are really supporting other women. That said, can it go too far? Yeah. You know, we're at a time when we're working out certain protocols. So, you know, some behaviors that may have been acceptable in the past, I'm talking about, you know, verbal behaviors or jokes, may become fairly quickly unacceptable, and there's no reason to destroy someone's career over it. So I think we're working that out, because that's going to be important, or there's going to be a backlash that's not going to help women. But I feel confident that will happen over time. So I think, it has been, you know, mostly, a very positive movement, and really to me demonstrates that women have the confidence to speak up and use their own voices even when there may be consequences. So it's risky, and women are taking the risk.
That's Sally Helgeson. Her book is How Women Rise, Break the 12 Habits Holding You Back from Your Next Raise, Promotion, or Job. Sally, it's been my great pleasure speaking with you today. Thank you so much for being our guest on Everyday MBA.
It's been a pleasure, Kevin. Good to be here.
That'll do it for this episode of Everyday MBA. And do you want to be a guest on the show? It could happen. Join our Knowledge Leadership Circle and be featured in an interview of your own. Be a guest. Just go to everyday-mba.com/guest for more information. That's everyday-mba.com/guest.